echo that. Oh, and that beautiful reminder of God's evidence is here. And I believe that this quartet reminded us today, not just with words, but with feeling of the love offered and extended to us by God. Thank you. If you are here today, you find us near the end of a generosity series. And I begin by sharing a quote from James Bryan Smith. Some of you may know him from a series of books about good. He powerfully describes the implication faithful, generous lives offer. Our little kingdoms are not our own. We are stewards of God's gift. Everything belongs to God. That changes everything. No longer can I say what is mine to do with what I please. Instead, what is mine is not really mine, but God's, and therefore I must ask, how shall I use the gifts you have given me? If we want to be faithful, generous people, as I believe God would want from us, we have to make practical decisions and prioritize and reprioritize our lives through milestones, through circumstances, and days like today. Along the way, we think about, as we become generous people, we spend less on things that don't lend to life or build us up. For we know in order to lead a generous life, it requires transformation. Transformation of our minds and our hearts, our lives. Because our life, our journey, is not just our own. In order to lead a generous life, we recognize that we are under a new rule when we commit to the love and life of Jesus Christ. Aligned with Christ, then we become the people God meant for us to be all along. We know the Bible is full of verses and reminders that God expects us to use what we have received to make a positive difference in the world around us. Jesus, among all of these verses, offers this parable from Matthew 25, verses 14 through 23. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. And then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I have gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with 2 bags of gold also came. He said, Master, you entrusted me with 2 bags of gold. See, I have gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. For the gift of Scripture, thanks be to God. This parable depicts how disciples are to demonstrate their faithfulness as they anticipate the return of the Lord. It's a deep passage of which we only read a part of the parable today. We don't go further to read about those who were not faithful with their gifts. Instead, we look at those who stewarded what was given to them for such a time as this. They were given something to do, and they did it. Those who are found faithful may hear their master say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Because God demonstrated lavish generosity upon us, we become the evidence just sung before. We become the first word of witness to the world of God's grace and God's love for all things. We become agents showing whole life stewardship. It becomes modeled in our generosity, in our way of living, in our way of sharing, in our way of service. And so today, on the day that the world celebrates Mother's Day, whether you are a mother figure, have a mother figure, you know the sacrifices a parental figure offers their child or their children. Such a figure's giving is profound. It's a continuous act of self-service, love, and nurturing that shapes a child's life while frequently requiring immense personal strength of the caregiver. It encompasses emotional support, physical care, and guidance, often requiring the caregiver to give of themselves and put the needs of others before their own. Such a figure acknowledges the heavenly parent. Can you think of people and places in your life where you have admired generous spirits? People who have offered spiritual wisdom, a deep-heartedness. What makes them generous? Their practice giving, their generosity has shaped them. I think of my parents today and how they have modeled that, and how my dad continues to model generous giving. As I think of my bio mom today, I say that because my mom died in 1999, so I have had the joy of having many mothering figures since then in my life. But when I think of May 1999, I think of the last Mother's Day with my mom, 2 short months before she died of breast cancer. The day after Mother's Day, one of her last days where she went out in public, she went out with me. She did not feel well. She had been in constant pain for months, if not years. But she took me to a lunch spot that meant something for us. It made sense for us at that time. We sat in a drive-up sipping root beer, talking about the big news of the week. My sister, my little sister, had gotten engaged the day before. And then my mother said, "I know I'm near the end. I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about your sister. I'm worried about your brother. I'm worried about your dad." And then she said, "Karen, there may not be a golden man out there." To which has become a family joke because it was 8 more years before I met Platinum Dave, right? But when my mom said, "I'm okay, I'm not worried about me, I'm worried about others," I cried. And I said, "Mom, I am who I am because of you. I'm okay because of what you have done and been for me. For my mother was the making of me." 2 Timothy 1:5 knows what I'm talking about. As Paul opens his letter, he tells of those who trained Timothy up in faith. "I am reminded of your sincere faith that first lived in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice." But you don't have to take mine and Paul's words about mothers and faith and their importance. How about the ancient Jewish proverb, "God could not be everywhere, and therefore God made mothers." There's the Spanish proverb, an ounce of a mother is worth a pound of clergy. So what happens when she's both? William Thackeray, mother is the name of God on the lips and the hearts of little children. So again, Mother's Day has relevance when we consider our faith parents, because like it or not, we are all faith parents in this space. And I think of the children wondering, how can I be a parent at this time? Well, someone once said it takes a village. How about it takes a congregation? We would be in danger if we didn't have traditions that we pass on, experiences in our homes, our communities, and our churches that didn't share something about the wide-reaching love of God and the grace of Jesus Christ. You may remember in the past me telling a story about my friend who heard her 3-year-old daughter singing the doxology in the living room, you know, the sung prayer of thanksgiving after an offering. And her mother ran in and said, "How do you know that song?" And the child replied, "Mom, we sing it in church almost every week." Her mother had forgotten the importance of repetition, tradition, experience, whatever you want to call it. We are the making of the people of this community. So today we ask, what do our lives teach? In light of Jesus's parable today, what ask might be of us today? How do the sharing of our resources model the ultimate Lord and Master? Also, I wonder what we make familiar to our children. What do we give the most attention to, exposure to? Things we want learned and things that we don't consider always that are being learned that we realize are. How do we teach our families that the Lord is our God? How do we model extravagant generosity? I had little thought about how a specific decision my young parents made in my home church when I was about 10 years old. I paid little attention to how that might affect my future spiritual life, my generosity, and even my ministry. Central United Methodist Church was the downtown church in Meridian, Mississippi. Years before my family ever arrived in 1976, some forward-thinking people thought about this downtown church and its influence in the area. They considered the developing needs of the church, they considered accessibility issues and parking for this growing congregation. So the congregation bought adjacent homes to the church as they became available until they had a city block plus in the name of Central. There were two obvious things to me about my church growing up. It was the importance placed on children and youth and on missions, specifically local missions. Prayers and discernment went on for years as to how Central was going to continue to live out its mission. And I cannot tell you the specifics, but even in my parents going to long-range planning committee meetings, I knew something was up. I knew it was going to be good for my spiritual home and my nurture. And then one day, I got to see the plans. By the end of my sixth grade year, the building would be ready. I didn't say it in this way, but my long-awaited days to be in the youth group were coming, and they had just hired a new youth director, which I was pretty sure was for me, but, you know, it was for the whole youth group. And not only that, we were going to be enhanced in this sacred space. So my brother and I were 9 and 10 when this all began, and I won't pretend I knew everything that was going on, but I knew my parents were writing 2 checks a month. We don't do that these days, but we might express how we give these days. I knew there were some changes in our household as my family made some choices in order to do that. And you know what? I never experienced anxiety from it. In fact, looking back, it was a faith-making experience. I learned to believe in a God who provides. I learned about a church's hope for its future. I learned about sacrificial giving. Finally, I learned about parental figures who wanted me to experience the wideness of God's love in a Christian environment. Central United Methodist Church has gone through three more major expansions since the 1980s. It took more than one generation to get them there, didn't it? It took them more than one pastor and that pastor's vision to get them there. It was never easy. Despite the resources, there were questions along the way. Yet many persons have been prayerful, faithful, and generous to get them to the point they are now. Recent testimony of this congregation has shared similar journey experiences, added programs and facilities to benefit the future of the church. At the same time, Kingsway United Methodist Church is not Central United Methodist Church in Meridian because we have our own questions. We have our own hopes and concerns. And today we find ourselves at a crossroads that one day might be historical in one way or another as we seek to pay down the debt and free our budget for greater ministry. Our time is now to pray and consider our part in our future and the next generation. How are each of us and all of us to do the one thing that we are given to do in the church and beyond the church so that we might be faithful and hear the Master say, "Well done, good and faithful servant." God uses our practices of giving to reconfigure our interior life. By giving, we craft an inner desire that becomes the driving element of our lives to seek to be more as Jesus would have us to be. We find that our motivations change. We find transformation coming. We find that we set new priorities to show who the Lord of our lives really is. And to be clear, it should not be us. We find that there is a new rule with a new Lord. Again, James Bryan Smith's quote, "Our little kingdoms are not our own. We are stewards of God's gifts. Everything belongs to God. That changes everything. No longer can I say, what is mine to do with what I please. Instead, what is mine is not really mine, but God's, and therefore I must ask, how shall I use the gifts you have given me?"